Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome to 21, to where you guys know the passion Yvonne and I share in community outreach. And we understand that we have listeners in the UK and in the US. So in the UK, they call it football, but in the US, they call it soccer. Nevertheless, we're excited about today's guest as she's the Director of Community Relations and Dynamo Charities at Houston Dynamo Football Club and Houston DAS, Valerie Holland. Valerie, welcome to 21.
Hi, thanks for having me.
To get us warmed up a little bit, we're going to throw you right in the fire with a game we call 21 Questions with 21. So without further ado, let's jump into it. Basically, Yvonne and I are just going to fire some questions to you, and you just right off the top of your head, you give your favorite answer.
Oh my gosh, I'm nervous, but let's do this.
It's going to be fun.
Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Whataburger.
Nike or Adidas?
Adidas.
Beer or tequila?
Beer.
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Tupac or Biggie?
Ooh, Tupac.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan.
Texans or Cowboys?
Texans.
Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A.
Las Vegas or Miami?
Las Vegas.
IHOP or Waffle House?
Waffle House.
East Coast or West Coast?
West Coast.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Grilled or fried?
Fried.
Car or truck?
Car.
Bluebell or Häagen-Dazs?
Bluebell.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke. I'm a Diet Coke kid all day.
Summer or winter?
Summer. Keep being cold.
Xbox or PlayStation?
I don't really game, but Xbox, I think I know how to play.
Dishes or laundry?
Ooh, laundry.
City or country?
Oh, it's a mix, but city. Go city.
And finally, when you get an opportunity to unwind, are you a house party girl or a club girl?
Oh, most recently now house party.
And you are now off the hot seat.
If you're enjoying this episode of the 21 Podcast, support us on Patreon. Every contribution helps to fulfill our mission to distribute content that educates and inspires. Gifts of any size make a positive difference and are always appreciated.
Thanks for playing, Valerie. That was fun.
Those are tough, especially when you're not from Texas traditionally. Tough one.
Well, and some of the answers weren't consistent with where you're from.
I know.
Yeah, I was expecting you to say winter. You know, Colorado is all about the mountains and snow. That surprised me a little bit.
Yeah. I don't like the cold, guys. I don't like the cold at all. I love the mountains, but I like the beach better.
I raise my hand to that. Well, as we begin to get into your story, Valerie, just for our listeners out there, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am originally from Colorado. I grew up in Littleton, Colorado, which is a little suburb outside of Denver. I was born and raised there, lived there for 30 years, went to college up in North at Colorado State University for my undergrad. Came back down to Denver and went to grad school at University of Colorado at Denver. And after college, I worked for Kroenke Sports and Entertainment, which owns the Denver Nuggets, the Colorado Avalanche, the Colorado Rapids, and the Colorado Mammoth. And I worked for them for about 10 years. Before moving down here to Houston to work for the Dynamo and Dash in 2014.
So you have a career working in the sports world. Did you play sports growing up?
I did. I played soccer growing up, but I was not very good. I was never anyone's best athlete. I think I enjoyed the orange slices at halftime and the Capri Suns and candy bars at the end of a game more than I enjoyed playing the actual games. But I did sports through high school and college, or high school at least. I was a volleyball player, a swimmer, and a girls golfer. So did a lot of them, but I was never the best at them, but I always enjoyed them.
I didn't hear basketball in there. Can you shoot a three-pointer?
Either. I can't shoot a three-pointer.
You can't shoot a three?
I'm so bad at basketball. When I worked for the Nuggets, we would have competitions on the court and everyone wanted to play me because they knew that they would beat me.
Well, we'll have to work on those basketball skills, Valerie. It's never too late.
I try really hard, but the jump shot is just not there. I have, however, made a behind the back half court shot on an NBA court. So I was really proud of that moment.
Whoa.
We don't need to talk about how many tries it took, but I got it.
Have you done that, Drew?
I have not. That's why I'm looking like the fact that you can reach the basket throwing it behind your back is impressive. I don't think I could do that.
It's like it's an over the head, like back. It was our mascot's like trick shot. And he stood at center court with like five of us for probably a half an hour trying to learn how to do this. But I was like determined and I hit it at first and everyone was so angry because I was the non-basketball player that did it.
Now, do you have this on video?
No, I asked for security footage and they were like, somehow we didn't have that one on there. So it's just my claim to fame in my head.
I guess we have to trust you with your word here today.
Thank you.
We will trust you. We can see it in our mind's eye.
Yes.
Valerie, when you were at Colorado State and then the University of Colorado at Denver, talk to us more about what you studied and what sparked your interest in sports operations.
Yeah, so kind of a weird path career. At Colorado State University and all growing up, all I wanted to do was be a high school business teacher. So I went to Colorado State to get my business degree in marketing as well as a degree in secondary education. So I went all the way through. I had one last job, which was to student teach for a semester, but I also needed to get an internship for my business degree. And I had a friend that had told me that if you apply to throw t-shirts at a Denver Nuggets game, the business school will count that as your internship. And I was like, I love basketball. I love watching the Denver Nuggets. Like if I can get an internship to throw t-shirts into the stands, I might as well do that. Sounds great. Applied for that internship. They didn't even interview me. But their community relations department called me and said, hey, you know, you've worked with kids a lot because I grew up being a lifeguard. I'm teaching swim lessons. And they said, we'd love to have you in our department. My business school said, yes, we'll count that as your business internship. You can take it. About 2 weeks into that internship, I fell in love with it. I loved everything that they were doing, every aspect that we got to, you know, be a part of. It still had the school part and helping kids and growing kids, but seeing them kind of have those shiny objects of athletes and sports, I was like, I want to do this. I also graduated when I was 21. And so going to be a high school teacher at the age of 21 seemed a little bit crazy that those kids were only going to be 3 years younger than me. So I said, I'll work in sports for a couple of years and then I'll go back to being a teacher. And here we are 15 years later and I've never gone back. And I, not that I wouldn't, but I've loved what I was doing. So I didn't major in sports or anything like that prior to having this job, but I did go to grad school. Once I was with the Nuggets and Avalanche and Rapids and all those guys, I knew I wanted to stay, but it was very hard to kind of break into that. So I did part-time jobs for them and ticket sales and all these kinds of things that were not my forte. I'm not good at selling. If someone tells me no, I hang up the phone and try and move to the next person, which is not what a ticket salesperson will tell you to do. But I knew I wanted to do this and I knew I wanted to stick with it. And I thought, you know, maybe if I have a master's, and something that will help me get it. So I applied for grad school to get my MBA in sports and entertainment. And the same day that I got accepted to grad school, I also was offered a full-time position with Kroenke Sports, being in their customer service department. And so I said I couldn't turn down either one of them. And I went to Colorado State and got my MBA at the same time I started a full-time career with Kroenke, being a customer service rep, which I absolutely loved because, you know, I like to talk to people, and that is nonstop people interaction jobs. But I did get my graduate degree with sports and entertainment, which was kind of cool. It gave you a little bit more perspective too of what we were doing.
So two very important pieces of advice, Valerie, that come through in what you just shared. First of all, the importance of the internship.
Yes.
And for college students and maybe even some high school students to look at those opportunities. In today's world, what do you think is the best avenue or channel to connect with internship opportunities?
I think if there's a specific organization that you want to work with, look at their website, look at, you know, anything around them, find somebody that you can talk to within it. Every sports team has an internship opportunity. It's just, that's what all of our organizations live off of. When I was an intern, everything was unpaid. Now you can find some that are paid or that are unpaid. And I understand some people need those paid internships to continue on with schooling. But I think that that should be something that you look at, and it shouldn't deter you whether it's paid or unpaid. You're going to get the same experiences. You're going to get the same knowledge from it. Even if it's not the one internship that you want, don't be afraid to take something different. I had no desire to be in community relations when they offered it to me. The way I looked at it is I thought you were in charge of taking the mascot to schools, and I wanted nothing to do with mascot wrangling. But it turned out that 2 weeks into it, I found out that it was everything I've ever wanted and that I loved. And so being open to those experiences and what you would want to do is great. I ended up subbing in on the t-shirt throwing internship one day, and I was like, this would have been horrible. Like, I'm not a good t-shirt thrower either. Obviously, without my basketball skills, can't get those up into the stands. So I think it's being open to it of no matter what it is, applying for a lot of them. I mean, in the sports industry, internships are highly competitive, and it's not that nobody wants you or that you don't have the right skills. It's that there's a lot of people, and you've got to sort through them, and you've got to be willing and, you know, find something that can diversify yourself in your resumes or what you're saying, find ways to connect with people. If I get, you know, I see an application on our online system, they've sent me a note on LinkedIn or they've emailed me or something, I'm 10 times more likely to look at that resume again. And I'm probably going to give you an interview request because you've tried. And so I think, you know, you've got to be persistent, and you can't just think that this is going to happen. And if you know somebody in an organization, don't be afraid to use that. I get calls from people still that are like, hey, I'm trying to apply for the internship in Denver. Do you still know anyone there? Can you help me? And I'll do whatever I can. You know, sometimes I don't know anyone, or sometimes I can't help, but, you know, use the resources that you have because that's important.
And I have to say, I love and admire the moment where you were given two great opportunities, and instead of doing mental aerobics around which one, you just said, I'll do both. But I know that had to be difficult. I know your schedule during that time must have been quite a grind. Tell us about that season of your life, going for your MBA full-time and working full-time.
So I was in, my MBA program was a professional one. So they had the classes slated to be in the evenings. And for most people who are working, the evenings are a perfect time to take classes. But when you work in the sports world, it's the least perfect time to take a class also. So for 2 years of my life, I would work my job normally 8 to 5, 9 to 5 in the office. I would go to class sometimes from 4:30 or 5 until 6 or 6:30 at night. And then the school was right across the street from the stadium. So I would run back to the stadium and I would start working a basketball game or a hockey game that started at 7 o'clock, and I would work from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. And then I'd go home, go to sleep, and I would do the same thing. And when you're working for hockey and basketball, those seasons run at the exact same time. So there were many weeks where it was hockey on Monday, basketball on Tuesday, hockey on Thursday, basketball on Friday. And so, you know, I couldn't even rearrange my classes to kind of fit that. So for 2 years, it was really difficult. And I mean, there were times where I was miserable and I thought I need to just forget this school thing, but I worked so hard to get in. And so I knew that I didn't want to give that opportunity up, and that if I could just do it for a few more years, or for 2 years, I would do it. I also worked on taking summer classes where we only had one sport to focus on, and I only had to worry about soccer matches, which were always on Saturdays and a little bit easier. But it became a very good lesson in time management and prioritizing things. I mean, I missed class sometimes because we had games or events, or I missed games and events because I had something with class. And so I knew that I wanted both of these things really bad, and I figured out a way to do it. And, you know, you manage through and you learn a lot. But I mean, it's helped me through the rest of my life when I get overwhelmed or have so much going on. I'm like, you handled school and a full-time job, you can handle this, you know? And so it was kind of some good life lessons for sure.
Yvonne, how many times have we heard this story here on 21 about that grind?
Too many to count. And it's such an inspiration. And Valerie, you said it and someone needed to hear it. Someone needed to be reminded of the fact that they can do it. So I appreciate you saying that today.
Yeah. I mean, I have an incredible support system in my family. I also have a younger brother that I'm very competitive with, and him and I started grad school at the same time. So there was no way I was letting him get his degree before me because he's like a math genius. And so I was like, you're not getting this math master's before I can get this business one. And so, I mean, that helped him. But I mean, my family was supportive. My job was supportive. My friends were supportive when it didn't hinder us hanging out. But I mean, it's good to have those things. But even without it, just my mentality was I have to do this. So.
So for no other reason, just to stick it to your younger brother.
Right. Yes. That is a constant battle between the two of us.
As an older sister, I can totally relate.
Can't let them get the best of you, that's for sure.
So now that you're not taking classes at night and you have this amazing job that you love with the Dynamo, it looks really glamorous from the outside looking in, but just talk to us about a typical day.
I'm sure you guys have probably heard this from the sports world. There's really not a typical day when it comes to working in sports, but weird as it may sound, during the pandemic, things are a little bit more typical. Most days I just start off with checking my email and trying to organize my thoughts. I'm a list person beyond belief. Like, I have more to-do lists. Crossing something off a list is like the highlight of my day. So I like to kind of pre-plan my day of what I have going on. I check most of the day. I'm in meetings right now, of planning meetings. We're in the preseason. So it's, you know, what are you going to do this season? How are you going to put this together? Let's talk about these events. Let's get this all going. And so when we're not working in an office environment where typically we all sit together and we'll just stand up and have these conversations, it's constant, you know, Zoom or Teams meetings where we're having to have these chats, and you'll hang up and you'll think of something and you'll call everybody back. And it's just, you know, a lot of that, but it's kind of fun because it's a good brainstorming and you sit back. But a lot of my time right now is spent planning. When the season gets started, my day is what we can do out in the community. Where can we reach out? Is it virtual? Is it in person? We plan a volunteer event once a month. So right now I'm literally trying to plan all of our volunteer events from January to December, because if I can get those scheduled and done, that's one thing I can cross off my list and be ready to go for the rest of the year and handle anything else that comes. As players start to come in, it's my job to kind of get to know them, figure out information about them, their likes, their dislikes, what they want to be involved in, so that as we do community programs, I can make sure to kind of put them in the right places. So I get probably a text message once a day right now. It feels like, if we've just got this player, here's their contact information, reach out, see what you can do, like that kind of stuff. And there's a team of us that kind of do that. So some are asking soccer questions, some are community, all that. So it's, you know, it's a lot of different things depending what the day is. I really never had a boring day. I mean, if it's a slower day, I kind of get to take a breath and think about it. But then I think of all these other things I want to do and try and plan them. So, you know, there isn't a typical one there, but it's ever changing and always trying to kind of plan ahead, get ahead, figure out the best way to put our team out in the Houston community, our players in the Houston community, and our staff in the Houston community, and to make an impact that people appreciate, that they see and that they enjoy. Not everything we do gets noticed, but we still like to do it because for me, it's just doing the good out there.
And Valerie, as you just took us through your day and mentioned that no day is ever the same, but one thing that is consistent is the workload that many people probably don't see in that industry. But what are some of the downsides of a career in sports and entertainment that many aren't aware of? I mean, you mentioned earlier that for you, it's fun, but are there any downsides to it?
I mean, I think it's how you look at it. There is, you sacrificed a lot. I kind of mentioned it with school. I sacrificed a lot of my free time and my friends. And, you know, you're working, usually you're going to have a game on a Friday or Saturday. So you're going to sacrifice your Friday nights or your all day Saturday to prepare for working a game and getting ready. And you work long hours and you work unconventional hours. I mean, I log onto my computer at, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, but I may be doing something with the team or with, you know, stuff with the organization until 9 o'clock at night, you know, and I have different breaks in between. I've missed a lot of things with my family. I've missed birthdays. I've missed weddings. I moved to another state and I've missed, you know, the birth of both my nephews, you know, things that I didn't think that I ever would, because when I lived in Colorado, I was, you know, super close. But even when I was in Colorado, I realized I missed a lot of things too. Friends' weddings, being a part of going on vacations, different trips. So there's some sacrifices you make. And I think as you go throughout your career, you also learn kind of how to balance those out a little bit better. It took me a really long time to learn that balance of work life and how to slow down sometimes or how to prioritize what I wanted to do. My first probably 8 years of working in sports, I committed everything to the organization. I said no to family things. I did all this other things. And I realized I didn't need to be doing that. I didn't need to be missing all these other things. And so, you know, you'll learn to adjust and you'll still miss things and you'll still work long hours and you're still going to get tired and you're going to get frustrated. And there's weeks where I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, I could go and, you know, I have an MBA. I could go work for another organization and make more money and work normal hours and have a regular life. And then I think to myself, how would I even know what to do with myself when I did that? Like, I don't know what a regular weekend looks like. I mean, lately I have, which has been kind of fun and weird to figure out, but like, I also love the hustle and bustle of it. I love, you know, kind of the adrenaline and the doing it. And then when you see what you've put together with sports, whether, you know, it's something that you did on field at one game that maybe no one else noticed, but you did, like, that to me makes it all. Or for me, the biggest thing is if I can see that I've inspired or made a change in a kid's life with something small, that's all it takes for me. I could have the worst year, worst month, but one moment like that will turn it around in an instant and I will be fine and be like, this is why I'm doing this. And this is why I will continue to do this. And I've had so many moments of those things that have happened that have touched my life. And I will remember forever, from times in Denver to times here, that like, I think about one of those and I'm like, okay, we're good. And this is, you're going to have another one of those soon. I can feel it coming and then you're good to go.
Listening to you and being an athlete myself, I can totally relate. And it's definitely an industry that requires a lot of flexibility when you talk about those awkward hours. But the Dynamo organization is a shining light in our community in terms of its community outreach and generosity. And we mentioned at the top of the show of your role in particular, but talk to us a little bit about some of the programs that you created and managed personally.
When I came to the Dynamo, I originally started in their premium service department. So I was in charge of season ticket holders that were suite holders or our club seat members. But I knew when I came into the organization that I wanted to get back into community relations. Kind of going backwards, I guess, a little bit. I left Kroenke Sports after 10 years. After working for four teams for 10 years with 80 plus hours a week, I was really tired and really exhausted. And, you know, I was like, I need to find just one thing that I can get one sport to work for as opposed to four. And maybe that'll make me feel a little less tired. That's not necessarily the case, but I knew I wanted to stay in soccer. So I went to apply for a job at the Dynamo, got it here, worked for premium sales, but knew I wanted to come back into the community relations world. And so 6 years ago, that job came open and they didn't have a community relations department prior to me being there, just a charitable foundation. So we kind of started from scratch and I knew we needed a school program. I knew we needed to find a way to kind of touch people. So we created programs like our Dynamo Goals, which was teaching kids to, you know, set goals in life, in school, and kind of throughout everything, and using our soccer players who score goals to kind of emphasize that. You know, the players will talk a little bit more about soccer and get a little clinic out of it too. So that's a program that we've evolved too. It's kind of changed throughout the years of what we can do and how we do it. We also have our mini pitch program. So we're building these mini pitches on old tennis courts or asphalt surfaces all throughout the city of Houston, because being a safe place to play is pretty difficult. And growing grass in Houston is really hard because it gets so hot, it's really swampy, and just, listen, I can't keep grass alive in my own front yard, so I don't know how people do it on a soccer field. But we build these little mini sport court ones. So they're on asphalt surfaces. They give kids a fenced in area, a place to learn to play soccer if they've never done it or to have little games. So we've built 9 of them throughout the city, and we have a plan with our ownership group and U.S. Soccer Foundation to build another 12 for the next 4 years. So those are some big projects. But along with those come providing free soccer clinics to kids within that community. So we're trying to build them in places where soccer is popular, in places where soccer is not popular, in places where soccer has never been heard of. And so it's just kind of trying to teach that and being the ones out there that are giving those kids those experiences and those opportunities. We do a lot of things. We've started a Soccer Starts at Home program, which really blew up during the pandemic because everybody was stuck at home. And these were small skills that you could give kids to do, or parents could have kids do. And it really is a program that provides a lot of interaction with kids and their parents. And it's not kicking a ball, so parents aren't afraid that soccer balls are going through a TV. It's all kind of fundamental things, and there's lots of programs to go with it. And we have our players involved, so kids get really excited with it. So on the community side, we do that. On the charitable side, you know, we have to raise money to try and give back. We do a lot of equipment donation here in Houston. There's a lot of kids and a lot of organizations that don't have the equipment to play soccer, or they do, it's really old, it's ratty, it falls apart. I mean, it's an outdoor sport in a city with humidity and sun, everything gets brittle pretty quickly. So we work on that. We fundraise through auctions. We have a Topgolf tournament. So most organizations will do a like traditional golf tournament, but we like to do Topgolf because it's a little bit easier. Soccer players aren't the best at real golf, but they can play top golf. So we go with that. And just a couple different things. And every year, again, we look to do a little bit more and to raise a little bit more money and a little bit more awareness in the community. So there's lots of stuff, but we try and make a big impact all around. This is a big city. There's 4 million people. So you're never going to cover everything, but we do our best to try.
Well, and just recently, Valerie, you made a tremendous impact at Jack Gates High School, which is a beloved high school in the Houston area. Can you talk to us about what specifically you did for Yates High School?
Yeah. So last summer, we received a phone call from one of our contacts at Houston Independent School District and Coach Clark, who is the athletic director for Yates High School. And they had gone through the process with the school and the board and everything to be able to add new sports to Jack Yates. And one of the sports they wanted to add was soccer. They got the approval for it. However, they had nothing to be able to do it. They had no equipment. They didn't even really have coaches or have anybody that knew how to coach. And so they asked if there was any help that we could give them. And so we partnered with Adidas and Bumpbox, which is Trey the Truth, the rapper in Houston and philanthropist here in Houston's company, to be able to donate over $15,000 worth of soccer equipment to Yates High School. So it was pretty cool. We went out there, we built all the goals for them. We got all the equipment. We, you know, Adidas donated cleats, brand new cleats to all of the athletes. Bumpbox donated them a huge, like, Dash branded boom box that they could use at practices that comes with a microphone. And then the coolest part, I think, was one of our former players, Ricardo Clark, wrote the entire coaching program for them. So he put together a manual of how to coach a soccer team for probably someone that's never done it. In speaking with both of the coaches at Yates High School, they're great. They're both coaches for other sports. And they had kids say, you know what, we want to play this. Is there any way you'll help us? And they said, yes, I'll be the coach. They didn't know much, but we've given them these resources. And so we made that equipment donation back in November. Last week, we went back out there and we mowed down their football field to being from 2-inch grass to 1-inch grass. This is what I learned, because that's what's easier to play soccer on. And we lined it as a soccer field so that when those kids now are out there practicing, they're actually practicing on a soccer field and not just the old football field. Obviously, when football comes back, it'll go back to being kind of a dual use. But we wanted them to get the feel of what it was like to play on a field because they hadn't been able to do that yet. They'll have their first home game next week, and we're sending out one of our PR guys to write a recap on the game like it was our own game. So, you know, this is kind of one of those projects that I am so excited about because it's not just a one-off. We didn't just go there once and give them equipment, but we're invested in how this works for them and how it goes. And from what we've done and we've posted about this, we've gotten hundreds of comments from other kids in schools that are, you know, we have a soccer program too. We could use some help. And you're just finding all these places around the Houston community that are also in need. And that's great to see. It's hard when I know I can't help everybody, but this is something that we strive to do. And we have a long time and we want to help as many people as we can. But being a part of this Yates thing, I mean, talking to the kids, one of the girls, I will not never forget this. She was like, it just is nice because it shows that somebody cares about us and wants us to succeed. And to me, that was huge, you know, to be able to have that impact on a kid's life by giving them a soccer ball and some cleats. I mean, that's, it's so good. Those are one of the moments I talked about where it's just, you have that and you're good to go.
Well, and that just warms my heart, Valerie, to hear that story. And if you are an alum of Jack Yates High School or attending and you're listening, we are expecting great things from the soccer program. The athletic program at Jack Yates has a storied history with football yes. championships, basketball championships. So let's get some soccer titles to add to that. So yes. thanks to the Dynamo and Dash organizations for that investment. And really as connective tissue to that, Valerie, the organizations are role models in our community with emphasis on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Can you talk to us about some of the programming that you have coming up to celebrate the different cultures here in Houston?
Yeah. So, you know, with everything that happened last year and rolling into this year, I think that diversity and inclusion and equity kind of came into a bigger limelight in every organization. And it was no different here for us. And it became, you know, us taking an internal look at what do we do, what have we done, and what can we do better? And one of the best parts about this organization is that we were willing to look at ourselves and say, we can do better and we should be doing better. And here's what we can do. And so, you know, we've put together a committee of people throughout the organization that are kind of taking a deeper dive and a look into this. You know, what changes can we make? What additions can we do? What do we need to really, you know, focus on and show to the rest of the Houston community, you know, as well? And so one of the things that's coming up first and foremost is February is Black History Month. And we have an array of events scheduled for that month, you know, trying to put something out once a week that is from a roundtable panel discussion with local community members and players and staff members, to getting some of our younger academy kids the opportunity to learn about African-American culture, and especially here in Houston, and telling the stories of some of our players and coaches and staff members as well. So those are things that we may not have done in the past. If we did them, it may not have been on quite this level, but we're growing it and we're expanding it. Same thing comes, you know, every March we've done a panel for young women on International Women's Day, showcasing our staff members. We have an incredible array of women staff members, and we have a women's professional soccer team, which is the only professional women's sports team here in Texas, or in Houston, excuse me. So we have the ability to kind of inspire others. And again, you know, we bring some light and some knowledge to that. We have for the last 4 years hosted a Special Olympics team. So we bring kids with disabilities and kids without disabilities together to play on a soccer team called our Unified Team. And this is an MLS league-wide program. We send them out once or twice a year. They travel with our first team, stay in hotels, play on MLS fields with other Unified Teams. And so again, just kind of looking around that it's not all one group, or it's not all one culture. It's not one of anything that it's, I mean, Houston is a city of 4 million people. Part of the reason I loved moving from Denver to Houston was the culture and the diversity and everything that this has to, you know, encompass. And as an organization, we're trying our best to embrace all of that. Again, it's huge. It's hard. It's a stepping stone from us, but I think we're making strides in the right direction and we're moving that way to kind of showcase those different things, you know, from Black History Month to Hispanic Heritage Month to women, to kids with disabilities, everything like that, and trying to be a part of it.
That's amazing to hear. And the Houston that Yvonne and I grew up in is a lot different than the Houston today. It's a lot more diverse. So programs like what the Dynamo are doing are very important. But we've heard a lot of what you do through the organization, but on a personal level, are there some charitable organizations that you support or volunteer with?
Yeah. When I moved to Houston, I became a part of Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and I became a big sister to a young lady at Rusk Elementary. And I did that for a few years. And that was kind of a cool experience. I mean, I grew up in kind of a bigger family. I have a lot of stepbrothers and sisters. There's 8 of us. We call ourselves the Brady Bunch plus some, 4 boys, 4 girls. So I was used to having siblings, but it was kind of neat to have a younger sibling at this age to be able to kind of talk up to. And so I do some stuff with Big Brothers Big Sisters. I do a lot of stuff with Boys and Girls Club, and then MD Anderson Cancer Hospital, when I moved down here, has a special place in my heart. I lost two grandparents, both to cancer, that I was very close with. And when you find a hospital that really specializes in that, that to me was amazing. And then a year later, we began partnering with them on our team side. So it all kind of, my personal life and my work life like to combine a lot, but I do a lot of donations with them and events and stuff like that. And then Special Olympics has always been something that I have been a part of from Colorado to here. And it just stems from growing up and having family involved in the same thing. And so my family was very good about teaching me about being involved in the community, volunteering your time. If you have funds, volunteering funds, if you can do that, donating what you can. And that's something that I think I've strived to do all the time. And I think that's why I'm good at my job also, is that that's something that's also in my life. It's not that I go and do this for work and then I live a different life. There are two things that really combine together.
That's amazing, Valerie. And as we listen to you today, we've heard about your commitment to your career in the Dynamo organization. But if there is time in your life, what are some of your hobbies?
I have lots of random hobbies, I think. I like to run. I am horrible at it, again, but I like it.
So
it's my release. Yeah, and running in Houston is very different than running in Colorado. Also, Colorado, I couldn't breathe, but I was freezing. Houston, I can't breathe because the air is too thick because it's 9 million degrees. But you figure out a way and you learn how to do it. I'm a huge water person. I love lakes. I grew up water skiing. If you can find me a boat and a water ski, I will water ski any day of the week. So I just kind of like to be outdoors. Outdoors in the summer in Houston, again, is a little bit different, but you know, you figure it out, and I've learned to adjust, and that when you, everybody here sweats, that's just what happens. But yeah, just outdoorsy, reading, spending time with my friends and family when I can is something that I just love. I'm super close with my family. None of them live here. I'm out here by myself, but you know, talking to them, FaceTiming them, going to visit them when I can, that's always fun to me. And then, you know, just getting out and meeting people, doing weird things, exploring the city. I mean, exploring Houston has been fun. It's huge. I think I found somewhere that I like to go, and then I find somewhere different. And then, you know, you keep seeing different pieces of it, and people keep showing you different pieces of it. And I love hanging out with the local people or my friends that are from here, because what's normal to them, I'm like, this is so cool, you know? And they're like, okay, great, you know? And there's so much to do here. So exploring the city is probably another one of my hobbies.
Well, it's been amazing to get to know you, Valerie, and to hear about your drive and learn a little bit about your life. But let's rewind a little bit. Let's take you back to the little girl that grew up in Littleton, Colorado. If you can go back in time, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, my gosh. That's like the hardest question to think about, because I don't know if I would want to tell my younger self to change anything. I think all of the experiences that I went through are what made me who I am today. Maybe the one thing would be to not to be scared of anything. I think when I was younger, I maybe got nervous and didn't do things because I was afraid of failure, but not to be afraid of that failure, that even if you fail, it will make you who you are. It will change you in some way. Don't shy away from experiences that you're not sure of or things like that. And so, and to know that you're going to be proud of everything that you do. I think to me, again, I had a great support system, and I like to be that support system for other people now, but I wouldn't necessarily change anything. I had some crazy life experiences growing up in Littleton that I, to this day, you know, say changed me for the better, even though they were pretty traumatic and maybe not something that anybody should ever have to go through. I guess context to that, I don't know if that has anything to do with this. I went to Columbine High School. And I was at Columbine High School when Columbine happened. And most people, you know, that could have broke you and changed who you are. But for me, it made me a stronger person. It made me who I am today. It made me appreciate everything that I have, who I have, what I have, and what I can do more than I ever knew. And from that day forward, I think I lived every day like, you know, this is the best day that I've ever had, and it's going to be that way. And I appreciate everything more than what it was. And all of that kind of stuff. And a day that could have changed everything is actually a day that I like to say put me in the right lane and took me to where I am now. So,
well, and I appreciate you sharing that story. And, you know, I'm meeting you for the first time today, but your spirit, your light definitely shines brightly. And I can tell that you've made the most of every single day of your life and you've bettered the lives of others along the way. So, gratitude. Agreed. For that.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
What's next for you?
Oh my gosh. I think, you know, I love what I'm doing. I think I could do this job for a million years more. So I think what next is just seeing what else I can do, you know, how I can hone in my skills, what more I can do in work and community and things that I have, you know, really it's just continuing on the path, but growing it and seeing what I, you know, where I can grow from. I like to continuously learn. So I'm looking into taking maybe some classes that will help me with some different things like writing grants, fundraising, just things that, you know, I didn't go to school for any of this. So I've learned on the fly, but maybe it's time, you know, to go back to school. I said I never would do that after grad school, but maybe you go back and learn some things and just, you know, continuing to build bonds throughout this community and meeting the people around it and just trying to be a positive light in other people's lives as well.
Well, I know whatever it is, you're going to do it with excellence and you're going to make it look easy, but
I hope so.
And when you're running or in the zone, what's on your playlist?
Oh my gosh. My playlist would make so many people angry because it's not consistent by any means. I go from like Ed Sheeran, cool, calming, relaxed music to like a country song to some old school hip hop to like Spanish music. So right now I'm kind of in a like country phase. There's been some good new country songs that have come out. So I've got some, you know, Dierks Bentley, some, I don't know, Lakeview, Brantley Gilbert, like whatever, randomly. But when the weather starts to get warmer, I get a little more hip hop and I have a Jeep. I like to take the top off of my Jeep and drive around the city listening to music as loud as I can. But yeah, I think it's just a variety. Again, it kind of just goes with my personality. It's just whatever I can find that has a beat, I like it.
Well, that's funny. I have never heard the temperature correlation to hip hop, but appreciate you sharing that.
You know, at house parties, you got to keep that music consistent. You can't be jumping around, Valerie.
Listen, my friends were so angry 2 New Year's Eve ago when I had everyone over to my house for New Year's Eve. And my playlist started playing and they were like, yeah, we've got this. And then it went to some slow country song and they're like, what are you doing? Unplug, you're no longer in charge of being DJ. So I know that I'm not to be anybody's DJ except for my own. So when people are like, turn on a song, I'm like, why don't you pick what you'd like to listen to? Because I'm going to anger everybody.
Well, Valerie, this has been my favorite time of today. We appreciate getting to know you, learning more about your story. You are definitely, again, a light, a shining star, and you just keep doing you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I had a good time today, too.
We love having you here.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in.
Enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me.
Keep being the best.
Director of Community Relations and Dynamo Charities at Houston Dynamo Football Club.
Let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths, and always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com and follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, Train Harder.